ahead and call our pre-council to order. It is May 5th, 2025. We have one just quick note I want to say before we get into the main topic of tonight's conversation, is that since posting of the tentative agenda, this council has received the resignation of Lisa Meyer as the Ward 2 council member effective May 16th. And so I would like to reserve 15 minutes at the end of this pre-council for the discussion of the timeline for holding a special election to fill the vacancy, if that's possible. So I'm giving you guys that heads up, and also my fellow council members that heads up. So thank you. And with that, I'm going to kick it over to Aaron Keyes, our interim director of utilities.
Thank you. And then I'm going to introduce our consultant, Kyle Stevens. He's with Stantec. And they were the company that we hired to perform this cost of service and rate study recommendations. So thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Aaron. And great to be here, Mayor and council members. What I want to go through, and it looks like I cannot advance the slide. What I want to go through is our rate study and the recommendations.
Can you push the button on the laptop?
Try the laptop.
Is it on this one?
Is it on yours?
I don't think it's on this one. Should it just be the right button?
No.
I know it worked when we were trying it.
You want me to advance it?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
All right, I guess I'm going to have to do it.
Aaron will be your clicker.
I'll give you the look, Aaron. Yeah, we'll move it. I wanted to start with this slide real quick that just at 30,000 feet sets the stage for what we'll be going through this evening. And we really think about this as a set of interconnected investigations. And so a rate study is starting first and foremost with answering the question of how much. And what we mean by that is how much revenue does it take to run the system, not only this year, but also looking out 5 or 10 years into the future. Once we have the answer to that question, we then do a deep dive into the expenditures of a given year, this fiscal year 2026 we're going into, and we think about how the service is being provided, the functions that are being provided by the city in its service of water customers. And we're going to essentially answer at the end of that what it costs to provide those services. That then sets up a foundation for us to move into how do we collect that revenue? How do we set up a schedule of rates and fees that proportionally recovers the cost of running the system in a sustainable manner over time and collects the full amount of revenue we need? Aaron, if you want to advance it. This next slide, I just wanted to put up, this is the timeline for the study that we've conducted for the city. So I actually received the first data points right on New Year's Day, and we've been working from New Year's Day to May here, 5th, to come up with the recommendations that you're seeing. And so all of those steps I mentioned, those investigations, a ton of work going back and forth with the great staff here to get the insights to provide these recommendations today. And first, we'll start off with the financial plan or answering that question, how much. If we want to go through, what we typically do here is we need to assemble the pieces of the puzzle. So this graphic right here, the annual revenue requirement, as we call it, is just a technical term of how much. And we need to add in there all of the different elements that the city is essentially engaging with on the water side of the utility here. So things like personnel expenditures, operating expenditures, vehicles and equipment. And then this is a very infrastructure intensive service you're providing. So things like debt service, money we borrowed to invest in plant and equipment, as well as ongoing capital projects and the cash funding of those projects are key considerations, right? And those change each year. We worked with staff to identify different plans and levels of investments over time. And you'll see in a minute here, a model we put together that brings all of these pieces of the puzzle together. This real quick is just a snapshot. So the data that we're working with here is fiscal year 25 as we began to build the model. And this just shows you it's about $36 million overall and how that starts to break up between a number of different expense types. So we've got personnel and operating expenditures about $20 million, capital vehicles $3.3 million, debt service, as I mentioned, a big part here, $6.7 million, and then finally some transfers at $4.3 million. Couple key assumptions before we get to the output of the model, just so we're all on the same playing field. We did use the audited fiscal year 2024 budget, or balances, as well as the adopted 2025 budget. As far as forecasting goes, we've excluded the purchase of AMI meters for the model screenshots that you'll see in the next few slides. We've included a capital investment plan that was really intended at meeting the minimum needs of the system. So this isn't a gold-plated plan. This is really just meeting what we need to continue to operate the system as a status quo. No new personnel positions forecasted. And the next debt referendum we have placed in the forecast in FY 2030, that's about $50.1 million that's projected currently. Now this first screenshot, this is a screenshot of our model, putting all of those different elements and projections in play over a multi-year period. And I refer to this one as the diagnostic view. This is as if you go to your doctor and ask, how's my health? So what we're doing here is we're setting the rate increases to zero. That's the first line in each year. And we're looking at the relative balances of cash out, which is that orange line in that middle graphic, to the black line, which is the cash in. And the first key finding here is, as it stands today, in the current year we're in, we're deficit spending right now, meaning that our revenues are below our expenditures. Our model's projections going out would say that that would continue into the future without any rate revenue increases going forward and would grow over time. The key consideration here is on the far left. That's the operating fund balance. So we do have a minimum balance that we would like to hold in this fund. That's designated by the black line. And what we're showing in this projection without any increases in revenue, we would be without fund balance by fiscal year 2027. So we would deplete our fund balances in order to fund that gap between revenues and expenditures. Now, this isn't that uncommon. Honestly, as I put these together for many cities and municipalities throughout the country, the presence of inflation and increases on wages, a lot of cost pressures have gone into the utilities over time. And so it's not uncommon to see this type of situation as we run the diagnostic view in today's world. And just highlighting there the unbalanced, when we talk about these funds, what we're really looking for is sustainability over time. We want to see the cash in and the cash out on top of each other, that middle graphic. As we move forward one slide here, what I've put together next is just-in-time rate increases. So what we're doing here is just letting the model solve for the exact amount of revenue increases we would need in each given year to balance that equation, to ensure that revenues match expenditures. And what you'll notice is, with the next slide, Aaron, we have a set of increases here. They'll jump around a bit, though, right? Because the capital plan moves around a bit. The way the expenditures change in each given year is not level. We don't necessarily usually recommend a plan like this because it can lead to some unpredictability. We like to give customers predictability in the level of changes over years. If you go forward one more, Aaron. So the recommended plan here would be a set of smoothed out increases. We are starting from a point with a significant deficit. So in order to stop the erosion of fund balance, what we're recommending is a 12% increase in revenues in fiscal year 26, followed by 10%, and then followed by an indexing plan after that of 3%. And what that will get is the utility on a sustainable path going forward. And I want to say wait till the end for the bill impacts and increases. This doesn't mean 12% across all bills, because we've got another set of analysis we need to go through to determine that. Aaron, if you'll click through one more. What I want to point out here is with that 12%, what you'll notice on the fund balance graph now, as compared to the one I showed a second ago, is while fund balances were declining, now as we get through 2026, they start to flatten off, and they'll no longer deplete as we go forward. So this plan is fundamentally sustainable as we move forward, given our projections and the capital investment needs of the utility that we've projected in the model. You want to move forward? Perfect. So now we'll move on to cost of service. And cost of service is really fundamentally a deep dive into the expenditures. So this graphic right here shows the fundamentally an illustration of what we've done. We've done a by-the-book approach here. The book that's put out by AWA, or the American Water Works Association, is M1, and it prescribes a very detailed approach to taking a water utility's expenditures and breaking those costs down into the different functions that a utility provides. I really like to think about this as, following the water, if you will, getting it from the source of supply in the city of Columbia, that's the wells, moving to treatment, moving out to the transmission and distribution systems to move that water out to your customers. And then we might have metering functions, customer functions. Well, what we want to answer here is, what does that cost, very specifically down to the dollar, for the City of Columbia as the utilities run today? Again, we start with the exact same data. So instead of looking out multiple years, we're really more fundamentally taking an X-ray of the last budget that we have, which is fiscal year 2025, the adopted budget. So again, start with the exact same budget that we talked about, but we're just going to look at it a little bit differently. And so as we go through this process, we have a number of discussions with staff. And fundamentally, what we're doing is going line by line within the budget for every single department, talking about what those expenditures represent, and then thinking about how to break those expenditures using the data that's relatively available within the city, or available within the city, into those different functions. And what this graphic just shows is, in fiscal year 2026, with that 12% increase that we talked about in revenues, how the costs are distributed. So I start off on the left here. Those are really those hydraulic functions. Think about the source of supply, treatment, transmission, distribution. It's a big cost. Those are the fundamental services you're providing, or functions. Move off to the right, then you've got meter costs, customer service costs, some fire, public fire protection, as well as administrative costs of the system. These are the core functions that will then convert in the next step as we move forward into the system units of service. And so the cost of service, the way that an M1 cost of service works, is we're trying to identify three fundamental hydraulic functions of the system. And we refer to those as base capacity. That's the average amount of water that the system's producing. In addition to that, though, oftentimes the capacity of water systems is sized not only for that average demand, but also to meet the peak use demands on the system. And there are two types of those. Those are going to be max day demands and peak hour demands. And so in this graphic, I'm just highlighting across those different functions how they break up. There's, in most utilities, a lot of average day costs. That's in that orange. But you'll notice by the green color, there is a decent amount of max day cost that's been identified. On the next slide, I'll tell you the exact dollar amount across those different functions. And on the distribution function in particular, you'll see that at max hour as well. Oftentimes, that's right at the end customer you're providing that additional capacity for those instantaneous demands that they require. In addition, as I mentioned, we've got meter costs, customer service costs, if someone calls a utility or has billing questions, and those public fire protection costs. Really what we're trying to do here through this cost of service is create these buckets of costs that we'll then think about during the rate design step, how to most equitably and proportionally recover as we set the rates for customers. And finally, I'll just end cost of service with this table. And I know there's a lot of numbers here. The critical part here for me is just being really transparent about the costs we've identified. So this first section over here talks about the exact dollars we've identified as we look forward into fiscal year 2026 that's associated with these functions. The average day, 18 million. The max day functions we talk about, meeting some of those peak demands, 9.1 million on the max day. Peak hours, another 1.9 million associated with, again, usually in the summer months, those additional demands that are placed on the system that the city has invested in as far as the plant, and the linear assets, the pipes in the ground, to meet year-round. Addition, you'll see the customer cost down there, 1.1, some public fire cost of 700,000, and some meter costs, right? Purchase a meter, repair of meter, installation of meters on the system of 2.9 million. So now I'll get into the rate design, and this one's a little bit longer because I wanted to go through how we connect all the dots here between the top two sections that I've just gone through. You'll advance us, thank you. As I start here, before we talk about any recommendations, I do want to stop and talk about the current rate structure and common rate structures for water utilities. They are broadly broken up between two types of charges, and they're both on the screen right now. These are the current charges that are in place. The first set of charges are your monthly base charges in the top table. They typically vary by meter size, and that is before any consumption on the system or any consumption that a customer has. These represent typically a couple different cost components. So typically you'll find your customer cost in there, some meter costs. The biggest cost typically here is your readiness to serve costs. The idea that even if a customer is taking no water, this, you've invested in a system that's ready to serve them 24/7 where they are. Those will typically scale up because larger meters are able to instantaneously access more demand on the system. Additionally, you do have a standalone fire charge as well that I've put off there to the right that covers those fire protection costs that shows up separately on the bill right now. And then after the base charges, we move to the bottom section in this table. And in the city of Columbia, we have a fee structure right now that is two parts. So first, it's seasonal, meaning that in the winter months, there is only one fee that's applied to volume. That is 322 currently. It's tier one rate shown up here, or the non-summer in the far right part of this table. And that applies to all customers in that those months. Well, however, when we transition between June and September to the summer months, we move to a tiered system. The tiered system right now, when it's activated in the summer, looks at an individual customer's winter average consumption. So that is going to be January, February, and March, their average consumption in the winter months, and then ratios off of that, if you will. So the first tier, they'll get 70% of their winter average consumption in that first tier. If they use any above that, it'll then fall into the second tier, which will move all the way from 71% up to 170% of their winter average. And then finally, the third tier would capture any consumption above that threshold. And you can see the dollar amounts there. This is in terms of CCF, will escalate. So this is a very normal type of pricing for a water utility. We call this conservation pricing. So you'll see it goes from 322, 444, 689, and it just shows the relative change in the cost for that water. Typically, it's associated with more peak demands on the top. What I'm going to first talk about are the base rates, and what we are recommending today for the City of Columbia is to have rates and charges that are aligned with the cost of service. So what I'm going to do is use the components that we've identified in that cost of service and talk about the best places to recover them in the rate structure, meaning at the end of the day, with the proposed rates and fees that you'll see, we can trace each dollar in the utility from what it's being spent on back to the service that's being provided and the customers that are using that service. There's a direct line we can draw between the expenditures and the fees that we're proposing today through this process. On the base rate, a couple recommendations. So we're going to recommend that you recover 30% of the overall revenue requirement in your fixed charges. That is very in alignment with industry averages. You want to make sure you have a certain amount of revenue collected on an ongoing base in those base charges. That provides some stability from the utility, especially in the event of unforeseen conditions or different weather patterns that may influence the volumetric side. This provides stability over time. Currently, it's 29%, so what we're really doing is just keeping that at a very similar level. We would like to recommend the simplification of base charges by including public fire cost within the base charges. So there wouldn't be a standalone charge, but rather it would just be in the single base charge that a customer pays going forward. And then finally, I'll show you in a second here, what we're going to recommend is taking a couple components here that we've identified and scaling them differently for the different types of connection, mainly the different meter sizes on the system in a different way so that the cost is collected proportional to the usage of these different items. This table at the bottom just shows you the four cost components that we most commonly would collect in base charges. So customer cost, meter cost, fire protection cost for those public fire protection, and in some portion of those average day costs. In this case, we're recommending 30%, which would get us to about $10.2 million overall in recovery in the base charges. If we move forward, this graph will really tie it all together. And so what I'm showing in this graphic, and I've broken out here, is the idea is, starting in the orange there, which you can barely see on the graphic, it's roughly $1.84 per bill, customer-related costs. Those don't need to scale by the size of the connection or the CCF used. That is really fundamentally a function of how many customers you have on the system and bills you're issuing. We'd recommend you just scale that evenly across the board. However, when we talk about, say, in green, meter costs, we'd recommend that that's scaled based on the cost of meters going forward, meters that the city's purchases, and they vary by the size of the meter and actually increase for those larger meters. And so you'll see that green portion of the bars there, which represent the total base charge that we're proposing, increases as we go across. And the largest part will be that capacity scaling in black. That represents the readiness to serve component. That's the average day cost that we're going to recover, the portion of average day cost that's recovered in base charges, that just represents the fact that you've invested in a system that's standing there ready to serve your customers. And the fact is, when you have larger meters, they're able to demand a lot more a lot larger portion of water instantaneously, so they should pay more readiness to serve in the base charge. We move forward one slide here. I just wanted to show you, before I show you the full customer impacts, I thought I would pull this one out a little bit separately. This shows you the current charges with the included fire fee right next to the calculated charges that are coming out of our analysis with the recommendation. What you'll notice here is most meters stay relatively unchanged or have moderate impacts. The three that I'm going to call out here are going to be the 1-inch, the 1.5, and the 2-inch. Those ones will see larger impacts. Those are typically not on residential homes. They could be potentially on a few, but not many. That's typically going to be on larger, more institutional commercial uses or irrigation type uses. And what we're just seeing there is a larger variance from where the current fees are to what the calculated cost of service is right now. And this proposal is just to fix that by raising those ones up to the full cost of service for the base charges for those meters. And if we move on, the next side of the equation, once we have the base charges, is really moving on to think about the volumetric rates. And again, you know, we come into this analysis with no preconceived notions, really letting the data drive us to think about the recommended changes here today. A couple observations as we started to look at the data and think about it. So the first, you heard me mention the current rate structure. When the tiers are in place in the summer, 70% is the threshold for that first tier. That 70% in our mind, as we think about it, is a bit punitive. If you think about a customer that uses the exact same amount of water year-round, their bill changes when we get to the summer months because 30% of their volume can no longer fit in that tier one. It's got to move into tier two. So that is a bit of a penalty and a bit restrictive during those summer peak months. We're going to think about a change that would alleviate that. Additionally, what we saw in the graphic, and I've highlighted in this chart right here, the orange shows tier one or non-summer if you're in the non-seasonal months usage. And then the other colors in blue are tier two or tier three. And this is showing the overall volume on the system for the water utility by month here. What you'll notice here and what really grabbed my attention was in November, as we start to come out of the seasonal months and the rate transitions back to a non-seasonal rate or no tiers are in place, we still have pretty high usage. We have some shoulder month usage that's occurring in November. We also see in several years shoulder month usage occurring in May. And the way the tiers are structured right now with the seasonal application of the tiers, we're not picking that up. It's not sensitive enough to pick that up because it starts on June 1st. And that's when we start to apply the tiers. So we are seeing some months, though, however, that are outside of that seasonal pattern that do have indeed changes that are associated with some seasonal usage there. Additionally, my last point on there, and this is just a point throughout, is, you know, when we think about the pricing of the tiers, I really want to have a strong nexus back to the cost of service, the idea that we can follow those dollars, how they're being spent on the utility, the functions they're being provided, and which customers are incurring those costs. Go ahead. Perfect. Thank you, Aaron. What I've got here now is the first recommendation here, and I've just got a side-by-side. This is tier sizing and application of the tiers. And so what we're going to recommend is twofold on this one. So one is move away from a seasonal tier structure to a year-round structure. The tiers would apply year-round. And that way, when those seasonal demands do occur on the system, the structure is there to pick it up. If seasonal demands are happening outside of those summer months that are currently defined, that usage for a customer would then fall into tier two or tier three and be priced accordingly. Additionally, here we're resizing the tier. So I mentioned that 70%. The recommendation going forward would be to move that first tier all the way to 100% of winter average. So we're no longer penalizing a steady user on the system. Rather, we're billing them year round at that first tier level. Then moving the next tier from 100% up to 200% of the winter average consumption. That matches your overall system winter average to peak in the summer. So that data point comes directly out of the overall system's usage pattern. And then anything over that, 200% plus, would be where the third tier would pick up and be billed. Now, as we go to the volume rates, I put this table up that came out of cost of service. Again, we're going to be pulling the dollars straight out of the cost of service analysis to do a bottom-up rate buildup in this case. The costs that are best recovered in volumetric rates are at the top part of this table. Average day cost, max day cost, peak hour cost. Now, remember, we recovered some of those average day costs already in the base rate. So what we're really talking here is the 70% that's remaining. But these are fundamentally related to the hydraulic capacity of the system and customers' volumetric usage. This graphic right here shows the calculated volume rates, again, with the proposals that I've talked about from structure changes in the top three bullet points here. And then on the bottom, what we're really showing now is a way to essentially price the tiers based on the cost of service analysis that we've conducted. And the way we do that is we look at, in tier one, only recovering average day costs. So again, that's 100% of winter average usage, which means the volume in that tier isn't necessarily fluctuating by month or by season. This is really the base usage on the system. When we move over, however, to tier two, you'll see now we have that average day usage, which is shown in yellow, but we're now also building on top of that some green max day usage. So that window there between 100% of winter average and 200 is where a lot of the max day costs start to begin to occur. However, there's no peak day cost or peak hour cost in that. We only see that when we get to tier three. And so what we do is add those units together in order to ensure that we're following the dollars here. And that tier pricing, when we calculate it out, would be $230 for the first tier, $633 for the second, and then $10.20 per CCF on the tier three, which again, tier three is everything over 200% of winter average. I've just put this comparison up here next to it, which shows on the left the current tiers. And what you're seeing on the y-axis is the winter average and the percent of winter average. What we're really talking about first on the structure is just the increasing of the blue. So we're showing the blue going from 70 to 100% of winter average for that first tier. And then essentially the second tier remains the same width. It just starts now at 100 and moves to 200. And then the third tier is 200% and above. And I've included the pricing below here. Again, now the pricing is tied directly to the cost of service. And those top two tiers are fully encapsulating those peak demands that we've identified, or peak costs for peak demand that we've identified in the cost of service.
Kyle, are you okay if we have questions during your presentation?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, all right, Nick.
Can you just speak, just to clarify for me, what peak day and peak hour mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go back and we think about the utility that's in place right now, that's invested and serving customers, it does on average 13, 15 million gallons a day, somewhere in that range on an average year. However, it's sized right now to meet demands up to 32 million gallons a day. So what we're talking about is, you know, year round, you think about that 15 million gallons a day, we'll use that number. Certain times of the year, however, the demands are much higher on the system. Those are demands we think of in that category when we do a cost of service that are the extra part of the demand. They are usually related to the max day that you're meeting, or in some cases out on the distribution, really a peak hour demand, really, when, you know, everybody's demanding all the water all at once, and you've got to be able to push that out and meet those demands. So you've invested in the system, the money and the resources there to meet that demand year-round 24/7.
So both those terms are really in terms of the demand on the system as a whole.
It is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely. So now what we'll get to is the key takeaways here, and I know we've gone through a lot of analysis to get here, and this is where everything comes together, right? So this is where we bring in the additional 12% of revenue, but we look at how these proposed changes will affect customers. However, given the way this structure applies, right, I think it's a very individualized structure. As it currently stands and as it's proposed. So what I've done here is put together a number of slides to really help us think about the impacts here, given that individuality and the way that winter average and the tiers apply based on a customer's individual usage characteristics. What you're seeing here is a distribution for residential customers. The black line in the middle is a 0% annual bill change. This is on an annual basis, since we're comparing a seasonal rate versus a steady rate. I had to do it on an annual basis. This is the annual change in the bill. Anything in green are bills that are decreasing, and the height of the bill is the percentage of bills that were issued at that level. So in the case of residential customers, what we're seeing is about 65% of bills expected to decrease. 35% will increase. Again, the main theme here is if you've got very steady usage throughout the year, your bill is expected to decrease or be very close to that zero line. If you've got peak demands on the system, what we're identified here through the cost of service is those are pretty costly. And assigning those to where that's happening leads to the bill increases that are shown in blue here off to the right. Residential's pretty modest changes here across the board, considering these are annual impacts. I'm going to move forward. I've just broken this out a little bit of a different way to think about it. And I think this is probably, if I had to say, the most important slide on the impacts. This is more of an illustration of taking two customers. So instead of that big distribution, take it down to two customers. In this top left quadrant, that is a current flat customer at 5 CCF. So that's the average usage on the system for water. You'll notice two things on there. One, you'll see the bill jump, right? So the bill there is $30.17 in the off-season months. It jumps up to $32 in the seasonal months. And again, that's because even though the usage is flat, that tier two picks up 30% right now of that usage, so the bill jumps. Under the flat use calculated off to the right, you'll notice that bill actually comes down in each month, and now it no longer changes. So this customer can predict their bill throughout the year. It's going to be very predictable if their usage stays the same. I'm contrasting that on the bottom here against a customer that has very defined peak usage on the system. So the black line on these charts, and I'm looking at the chart that's on the bottom left-hand quadrant, their usage changes pretty dramatically from the summer months to the winter months, you'll see. Goes down there to the low single digits all the way up to above 20, 25 CCF in usage. And what you're seeing there in the orange bars is the bill per month. And what I want you to notice is as we move from the left to the right in those peak months, because we're now allocating those full costs, those bills are higher in those peak months for this particular user. And I would expect on an annual basis here, and I'm showing it off to the right, this user to see a bill impact of roughly $244 for the entire year because we're pricing those peak demands, and they do have pretty significant peak demands on the system, where if contrasting that against the top, the bill decreases for that customer by $61.
And just to really sink this into me, the reason why of the increase is because that's the cost to the system. That's the cost of the service in those peak times.
That is because we've done this really deep cost of service analysis where we can fully identify those costs, and now we're fully assigning it to those customers, correct?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Absolutely. So now we'll move on again to show
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm trying to compare the previous slide and the one that you were on now.
Sure.
And I'm trying to understand how we are getting to an overall, I don't want to say increase because not an increase of bill, but an increase of revenue of 12%.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers on the right side of the graph where your rates are increasing,
yes,
it's relatively fewer people.
Yes.
Are we reaching this because we are able to recoup that throughout the full year?
So
if we're decreasing the bill for the majority of customers, how are we making those numbers?
So the way to think about this is you've got very modest decreases on steady users,
mm-hmm,
but what you'll see as I go through a few more slides is on users that have very defined large peaks on the system, the magnitude of their increase is going to be much larger.
Okay.
To get to that point, exactly what you mean, we've got to get our revenue overall. Sometimes I use the analogy of a water balloon. If you squeeze on one spot, it's going to come out the other side, still the same amount of volume, right? We have to get the overall same amount of revenue here, and that is because of this dynamic of a relatively low increase here, and then a few customers seeing a much larger increase.
Before you move on, about how many residential customers do we have accounts?
I think it's 50,000 overall, I want to say. We have customers on the system. The vast majority are residential, I want to say. I can get you the exact number out of the data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just remember it being like 48,000 per period. So
yeah, I know it's 50 overall. I want to say it's in the high 40s for residentials,
okay,
right in that range.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I was just, because when looking at that and looking at that, you know, then what's the 4%? You know, I'm just kind of doing those numbers of how
absolutely
many customers are impacted.
A small commercial here, again, showing you a very similar distribution. However, on each of these, you'll notice the axis moves a little bit, and that's because these bills are different, right? So commercial users have a bit larger bills. I'll notice here, you know, this is more of a 50-50 situation here. We actually have a little bit more increasing here off to the right as that tail goes off to the right. We also have a decent bump there, I'll notice, right around the $120 level of an annual change. as I diagnosed that and went back into the billing data looking at these customers, what this really represents is one of the proposed changes is the applying tiers year-round. In this customer's case, what we're seeing is there are significant peaks happening in the off-season month currently that don't get picked up in the tiers, so they get picked up under the new rate structure, and that's where a lot of those increases are coming for here on small commercial. Again, though, pretty balanced overall here. The exact same logic applies. If you're a steady user, you're seeing a relatively flat bill or slight decrease. If you've got some peak demands, it's going to be on the right side of this chart with an increase. I've just put up that illustration again, small commercial impact. You know, the average user here on the left has a little bit more variability in their bill off to the right. As I went through and looked at data, it's not quite as steady as residential. If you think about kind of a normal commercial and the year that they might go through, the hours that they hold, they have a little bit different usage throughout the year. And so I'm just showing some, you know, real customer illustrations here. Again, this average user bill goes down modestly throughout the year. On the bottom, we're showing, again, a peak user in the small commercial category there. Pretty significant change in usage, right? The system in the city of Columbia has to meet and is invested. And the other point I really like to make over that is, you know, you can't uninstall capacity. You have to invest in a system, maintain its readiness throughout the year just to meet those peak demands that occur in the summer there. And so you, again, see the exact same dynamic. The peaker in this case sees an increase in the bill and a modest decrease on the backside for the flat user. Large commercial impacts, there are not that many large commercial users. They tend to be very, very steady in their usage. The vast majority of those will see a slight decrease in their bill. There's only two on this chart that actually jump off to the right there with an increase on this bill. So very muted impacts on the large commercial category. Master metered, what we're seeing here, master metered, again, that represents, from a customer standpoint, typically apartment complexes where you have one single meter that's serving a number of units behind the meter. That's what we mean by master metered. Again, we're showing the distribution here. The central cluster of the distribution is slightly negative here, so about 67% of bills are expected to decrease. 33% will increase in this particular category for master metered. And now we really get to where the analysis and the structure starts to show some of those peak usage trends. So we've transitioned here to residential irrigation only. So it's a smaller customer group, but again, back to that point we were just discussing a minute ago, what you'll see here are the annual bill impacts now. The axis is a lot further over to the right. So these users represent the users that have the largest change in peak demands, whether it's a residential irrigation or commercial irrigation on the system. And through the proposed changes and the pricing of that capacity, these are the users that will see the largest increase in the bills. And what you'll see off to the right here is the distribution is no longer normal or bell-shaped. It's really fundamentally increases across the board for these users. I don't have any of these bills go down because these are the ones that are using most of that peak-type capacity on the system. If we move forward one slide, we'll just show commercial irrigation. It's the exact same chart. However, commercial bills tend to be larger on the irrigation side, so the axis, again, has been extended as far as the dollar amount. We're, again, showing this in bill change annually across the year. This is exactly the dynamic we've talked about across. It's not customer class specific. It's just the fact that they tend to be the larger peak users on the system.
What is the single green bar on that?
That single green bar, that is going to be ones that are a little bit steadier throughout the year. So that's right there at the zero line.
Got it.
Some of them do have some steady usage throughout the year, and they don't necessarily have the change. Some of these, though, however, have almost no usage in the winter months.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Absolutely. Just for comparison, oftentimes when I give these presentations, I get asked to compare rates to different communities. I always caveat that. Every community is in a different life cycle as far as where they're doing their rate increases, how long it's been since they've done a rate increase, how their system is set up, and the level of service they're providing. However, what I've done here is put a number of communities that are proximate to the city of Columbia. What I'm showing here currently in the middle there is $30.17. That's the winter bill for 5 CCF, or the average usage on the system. And what I'm showing here is if that was a steady user across the board, we'd expect you to actually improve in your ranking here. Right now, you're right in the middle. It would actually come down a little bit to 2581, given that steady usage and that dynamic we've talked about for kind of your average user on the system. Additionally, within the study, I was asked to look at a number of affordability metrics. Two that I'm presenting on here today would be the hours worked at minimum wage. That's shown in the blue off to the left. What this metric does is looked at the prevailing minimum wage and the amount of time and hours that would be required to work within a month in order to pay the water bill. It's 225 currently at 5 CCF. What we're showing here is it would move down to 1.88, so we'd see an improvement in affordability under this metric. And just to give you an idea, usually it's thought of as kind of 8 hours as the unaffordability threshold, if you will. If you get above that, it's really unaffordable. Below that's considered affordable. The point I'll make here is we've used 5 CCF, that's the average. Even if it's a bit of a higher usage household, as long as that usage is flat, we're gonna see some improvement in the bill and affordability given this change. So you think of a household that has a little bit more density or more occupants, this would again improve across the board. On the far right, I'm just showing in green, the water bill at the 20th percentile of income and the percentage of that household's income that's going toward the water bill, it's roughly 1.5%. It would be decreasing to 1.2%, again, assuming steady usage at 5 CCF. For that threshold, 2% is considered the high watermark as far as unaffordability. Above that would be considered unaffordable. Below that is considered affordability. So even as we sit here today, it's considered affordable, and we would move in a direction that would increase that with the proposed changes today. So the last part of the analysis is talking about miscellaneous fees. And so miscellaneous fees are a little bit different than everything we've talked about so far today. And what miscellaneous fees are really are two components we'll talk about today. They are where a customer calls the utility and is asking for a very specific service. So think about turn on, turn off, disconnects, those types of activities, maybe a new tap onto the system. There is specific cost related to providing those services that the utility incurs to an individual customer. And so what we were asked to do as part of the study was to just work with staff to get the current labor rates, material, and equipment that is being expended on the customer's behalf to provide these services. And what we do is a bottom-up buildup of each particular activity to identify what the cost is of providing that service. We then compare what we're charging today, and we make recommendations to usually move to the cost of providing those services in order to recoup those costs over time. And we'll just move forward. We've got a table here that we're showing of all the different services that the utility is providing that we looked at here. The current charges are in the far left column. The full cost recovery charge is in the middle, the next column over. And then two columns further over are the proposed charges here. What we're recommending fundamentally here is, as a principle, is moving as close to cost recovery as we can. There are some fees where it's more of a policy decision, thinking about service initiation fee or the disconnect fee. Oftentimes, those are set at a different level from a policy standpoint. However, fees, when we move down to tap fees, meter fees, what we would recommend there is moving those up to the full cost of service. What you will see for many of these fees is we're below the full cost of providing those individualized services. Again, these fees haven't been changed in a number of years, I think over a decade as we were talking. So it's been a long time since they've been changed. What you're not seeing here is, you're fundamentally seeing here is just the idea that costs have increased over time and the fees haven't. And so this is really just catching up to the current cost of providing these services. And if we move forward, there's one unique one, however, that I want to spend a little bit more time on. That would be what's often referred to as an impact fee or a connection fee, or in the city of Columbia's case, a water system equity charge. So there are a couple different names for this. What we're really talking about here is a fee that's charged, it's a one-time fee that's charged to new connections to the water system. And what it's meant to do is recoup cost associated with the investments that prior customers have made on the system. It's essentially a fee to buy in, if you will, to the water utility, given you've already invested in plant and equipment that's there ready to serve that growth when it occurs. It's just ensuring that new growth pays its way, pays for its fair share of that capacity. There are three different ways to calculate that. So there's a buy-in method that's most appropriate with systems with ample capacity where growth can be added to added to the current system and provided service. There's incremental, where we're essentially looking at the buy-in, but we're also maybe investing in a new plant down the road or something that's really expensive or a big change in the system. So we want to make sure we incorporate that. And then finally, that was a combined. The incremental is when you're maybe building a new plant, and we just do it purely based on the cost of that plant. And that's a system usually with no capacity or really limited capacity. If we go forward here, what we're recommending is the buy-in. So the City of Columbia's system currently has capacity to serve growth. There's no big changes on the horizon in the way that the system is configured. So the buy-in is the most appropriate approach to calculate the water system equity charge. And again, on this one, it's been a number of years, so about a decade since this one's been updated. The way that the yes.
Yeah, Valerie.
This may be a question for DeCarlin. We do currently have...
Make sure you have your microphone.
We do currently have connection fees that are most similar to the buy-in example here, right? They're just not updated.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's just updated to our to meet current
the
demand.
Cost.
Yeah, I see Aaron Keyes nodding. Thank you.
So in order to calculate it, there's a lot to go into it. Really, we're pulling all the fundamental fixed asset records and looking at the assets, the investments that were made, bringing those up to current day dollars. I've just put that up here to represent the calculation that's occurred here before I show you the updated fee. We're essentially taking the value of the system. We're subtracting any debt, because when a connection gets onto the system, they're going to pay that debt in their ongoing fees. And then we're dividing it by the system capacity. And there's usually a limiting system capacity. That, in Columbia's case, is the water treatment plant capacity, the 32 million gallons. If we move to the next slide, just wanted to show you here real quick the data points that went into this. So when we look at the current system's overall value, its source of supply, transmission, distribution off in that pie chart, it's roughly $200 million in current day dollars that the City of Columbia and its ratepayers have invested in the system that serves the city. That capacity is 32 million gallons, and we've identified for a normal single-family house a level of service of 227 gallons, which is just what we typically afford a residential house. What we're showing on this next chart is that base capacity fee as calculated in the prescribed method that I just went through as compared to the current fee. So the current fee is $578. The calculated fee is $1,169. I don't see anything huge in this one other than the passage of time. The fact that the fee hasn't been updated, it's really just a representation that the cost of the system that you invested in is increased in current day dollars when we adjust it for inflation. Again, that hasn't been changed in a bit. The only other thing on this one we mentioned, you know, that's essentially a doubling of the current fee. Sometimes, like on the sewer system, you can phase that in over time, right, to manage some of the impacts and not do the full jump at once. But again, the cost would support $1,169. If we move over again, just to put this into perspective, put together a chart here and gone out to a survey of other, usually we call these capacity fees or impact fees. You can see off to the left, a number of them are lower. City of Columbia, there's the fourth one right now at 576. And then the average is right there around the $1,000 mark. There are a couple outliers on the right there that are much higher. What this would do is put you very, very close to the average with this update in the calculated fee. Again, my same caveats apply here too. Probably on the left side, some of these haven't been updated in a long time. And so that's why you see some of the lower fees. They're probably in a very similar situation as the City of Columbia. These are fees that aren't updated as regularly as the normal rates and charges. Just next steps and just concluding the presentation here so we can get into the conversation, and I can go back to any other slides that you would like to discuss in further detail. If you want to go one more forward, Aaron. Just the financial plan, the high-level findings of the study. We are recommending an increase in revenue. We see that as 12% in fiscal year 26, followed by 10% in fiscal year 2027. Again, that's to put the utility on a sustainable path going forward from a revenue standpoint so that we match our expenditures. Also in cost of service, we fully identified now the cost of providing service across the utility in those different buckets that we talked about, the average day peak cost, as well as meter cost and customer cost. We would recommend that you fully use those identified costs that are currently up to date to design your rates and implement rates that are cost-based, where we can trace each dollar from the utility, how it expends those dollars, the functions that are expended on, and which customers are incurring those costs. All of the fees and recommendations I've provided to you, we have that clarity and that transparency with the proposal.
And then finally, on the equity fee that just went through, we would support moving to full cost recovery on that to ensure that growth pays its way and its fair share into the system that the city and its ratepayers have invested in. And then miscellaneous fees, you know, moving those going forward from a policy standpoint to full cost recovery where it does make sense to ensure that those are recovering their full costs. So now we're to the discussion, next steps.
Well, thank you, Kyle, for that.
Absolutely.
I know we also have members from the Water and Light Advisory Board, and I know you'll be talking with them at their meeting next week, but also open if any of you want to make comment or talk to council. I know Philip is the chair, but David, I know you're the water expert. So if you wanted to make any comments, I would ask you to come to the microphone, though, if you wouldn't mind.
So obviously, I only had a few minutes to review it and obviously watched the presentation. I just want to state for the record, what you just saw is the gold standard of water rate cost of service studies. Just full stop. I don't know, Kyle. I've no reason to say that other than the work that I just saw is the gold standard based on my professional expertise in the water sector. You know, we've heard the term equity bandied about a lot in terms of cost of service for rates, for water rates, for electric rates. This is the gold standard of applying exactly cost of service equity in terms of applying the exact cost to every customer that they put on the system. So it is fair from a who puts the most cost onto the system perspective while simultaneously bringing down the costs for the customers who need it the most. This rectifies all of the errors that have been made in previous years. The 70% is gone. That was a giant error at one point. The lack of investment in 2019, not matching the tier three that was proposed, that was a significantly higher one, that would be rectified. The lack of investment in 2022, when the base rate increases were put off until the bond was sold. Shrinking of, I already mentioned the shrinking of tier three. I don't have many questions for Kyle. He answered basically all of my questions during our meeting with the Water and Light Advisory Board to almost perfect satisfaction. I want to mention one thing, which is the complaint you're going to hear is that this is going to affect people who do a home gardening. That is a smokescreen. It just is. The recommended amount for a garden bed is 0.623 gallons per square foot per week. In a 100 square foot bed, which is probably larger than most customers have or any customers have, that's equal to 240 gallons a month, or about a third of a CCF. Yes, they would be impacted, but not that much. And I think we can maybe do a calculation that would show that. That is a smokescreen. That is not true. And additionally, if you're really, really concerned about that, maybe we can figure out a way to start tier two at 110% to account for that, right? Maybe if that's really a concern, but it's just not the case that those are the big users. The big users are the lawn irrigators and the pools. That's who it is.
You have a question for David? Yeah.
Sorry, that went by really fast.
Sorry,
it was good information because I am getting that feedback. One third CCF per year, per month?
Per month.
Per month during the growing season.
Right. And so if the average is, if that family uses 5 months or 5 CCF, during the growing season, they would be using 5 1/3 CCF.
Okay.
And I think customer communication is going to be really important because if they're using more than that, they're actually not using the amount of water that they should in their garden. Actually, that's where, like, you know, help, maybe a program to help with home irrigators, which we already have, right? Encouraging that conservation. We have those conservation programs in place. They're under-enrolled right now. And so, you know, if we get concerns from customers, right, pointing them to that program where they can actually learn, hey, how much water am I actually supposed to be using on my garden? Because if they're using more than the recommended amount, they're actually, you know, wasting water when they don't need to be.
Yeah, maybe we can partner sustainability and nonprofits that work on home gardening, farm your yard, et cetera. Thanks.
Thanks, David. Oh yeah, Don.
On the financial plan, under your recommendation.
Thank you for Kyle. Thank you, David.
How much of the 12 and 10% over the next 2 years do you estimate could be covered by just simply adopting the change that you have?
Well, so the changes we have are proposed for implementation in fiscal year 26 going forward. They would only include the 12% the first year. And then the next fiscal year, what we're showing currently in our projections is another need for 10%. Of course, that would typically be trued up in the budget process. You would kind of think, is that 10% still there? Given the gap that we're seeing, likely it's of that magnitude.
So the first year, the 12% would be covered just by simply changing the rate structure as you suggest?
Yeah, so if you think about our analysis, it really led one into the next. So the 12% was first identified. We used that 12% as we went to cost of service, and then the rates we ultimately identified fully recover an additional 12% in revenue over the current fiscal year. And then it would just be the next year you'd have to do an additional across the board 10%.
Or spread it out over a couple.
Spread it out if those dynamics allow for it. The current projection would say there's still a deficit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Al, can I ask a question? You have experience working in other communities. I assume they're also having an affordable housing crisis or housing shortage. For this proposal to increase for that equity, for kind of the connection fee or development fee, are any other communities looking at some sort of different way of calculating that equity if the developer is building affordable housing? Are you aware of any examples?
Trying to think of an example. Obviously, typically not. Typically, that water fee is fully paid the reason that it's typically fully paid is because if it's not paid, then your ratepayers are paying for it.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, the dollars have to come from somewhere. And so if that growth is not paying its part, then your existing users are paying for it. And typically, most communities would like to see if the growth is coming in to pay their fair share into the system.
Or if they're doing it, that maybe it's being offset, the utility is still getting their full cost of service recovery, but it's being offset by maybe a program within the general fund or something.
I was going to say, is that the only other place I've seen it is if the dollars come from somewhere else, right?
Right.
Where they offset, but the utility's made whole.
Right. Okay. Yeah, Nick.
In the presentation that was sent to us, there are several slides after your presentation about phase-ins over a three-year period.
Yes.
Do you want to say anything about that and what impact that would have if we do phase these in? If we do phase these in, what impact would that have on what we're trying to address?
Yeah, so we did. So if you think about the analysis, so two places that come to mind. So in the miscellaneous fees, there's a pretty decent gap on some of the fees between what we're currently charging in the City of Columbia versus the cost of service. A policy decision that often comes up would be the idea of either would fully jump to cost of service in the first year or potentially phase those fees in over a number of years. The revenue generated from miscellaneous fees is not a huge percentage of revenue over the utility. It's not a make or break it, if you will, but it's more about pricing those services at their full cost. So that one is typically one where I'll see it more applied. The other slides that are in there as well the other one that would be applicable would be the water equity fee, phasing that one. That one's a little bit larger revenue. Again, your system, you've got some growth on it. It's not huge in the overall, but it does matter. It's just more about balancing customer impacts and making it predictable, given the level of change here. So,
and I may have missed it, but when we're talking about miscellaneous fees, you talk about 12%, then 10%, then an ongoing 3% increase. But what would this apply also to miscellaneous fees, or is this something we need to look at separately?
So typically miscellaneous fees, and again, putting the water equity fee in its own bucket, and we're just talking about the miscellaneous fees where someone's picking up the phone and calling you, usually those are updated every so many years. We have a template we provided the city where you can put in those costs and update it. You typically don't raise those by the same percentage that you use for the overall revenue requirements just because it's a different cost basis. So,
yeah, just my concern there is that I think you've said twice that there are fees that we haven't addressed in a 10-year period.
Been a number of years.
Yeah, and so this is another one of those places that I think we need to be setting a reminder on our calendars or something so that we're looking at this more on an ongoing basis. At the beginning of, let me ask this one. What is the desired fund balance? You talked about having a fund balance. How do we measure that?
Yeah, so the city has
Is 20% as it is for other things?
It is 20%.
Okay, wanted to be sure about that.
And it has a capital component, too, I believe, in there as well. But it's adopted policy that the city has, fund target.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you mentioned about AMI not being included in this presentation.
Not.
So I know this is something we want to see done, and this question may not be for you, but I'm wondering how this impacts our future plans for the use of AMI and the benefits that come with that. And that might be an Aaron question. Yeah.
So we do have a scenario that we looked at where we would fund AMI over a three-year period, and the revenue increase we would need was quite significant. So we will have to look at either spreading that out over a longer period of time or finding some sort of mechanism like a loan, grants, that sort of thing, to help fund the water portion of AMI.
So can we anticipate you all coming back? So this would be water and electric.
Right.
Together.
So that's the water portion. When we did the electric cost of service and the electric rate increases, assuming we continue to do the rate increases as were recommended, we feel like that will be able to fund the AMI for the electric piece. Mm-hmm. But there's not enough reserve in electric to provide a loan to water for the AMI. So that's why we would need to look at some other funding mechanisms for the AMI.
So it's baked into
water.
The electric rates, but it's not here.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. And this is also a very basic capital improvement plan, just to meet some basic needs. It's not looking for significant growth or anything like that.
Yeah, Valerie.
Yeah. I like the connection fee, and I like the suggestion of increasing the connection fee at this time. It makes sense from an equity standpoint, and the fact that we haven't increased it in quite a few years. And I'm happy to think of that model in comparison to housing and increasing cost of housing. I just wanted to note, as we consider this, I suspect that as we weigh in on this and get more information, we may get more information from our housing and development department. All of our fees are real money that cover real expenses, all of them, and typically any of the fee waivers, that money has to come out of somewhere in the form of a subsidy. So this is no surprise to me that other communities are not waving a magic wand and saying that fee goes away. They're paying for it out of another funding pool. That would be the same for this or the majority of other fees, I imagine. If we were to do an inclusionary fee waiver for new developments that reserve a certain percentage of units for below area income, and I hope we do talk about that more.
Yeah. Kyle, question for you. Would you mind going to slide 30, which is the rate comparison showing us the difference between current and the calculated tiers? Because I think it's important, right? We keep talking about 12% and 10%, and again, it's not a 12% across the board.
No.
Increase to all, like these are the calculated based on the volume that is used. So what we're talking about then is that if it were to be then looking at the next year, would this be the same as far as our price per CCF, or will these be doing the incremental increases, like rate increases like we've been talking about?
So this applies for fiscal year 26 only, and then if you were to move to 27, the charges on the right side of your screen would all move up, presumably 10% is the current calculated one, but whatever that adopter rate, it would be applied across the board.
Right. I guess I'm wondering, you know, we had the conversation at the beginning, like the cost to the system, and especially things related to chemicals, personnel, obviously, all of those things. What are you seeing as an average of a percentage increase for rate increases from your other customers?
Yeah, I can't say I've got a defined numerical number, but I can say as we, you know, go around the office and we do a number of these studies throughout a year, and we have a number of customers that we've had a long time that we do this. Mm-hmm. Many of them are double-digit increases this year right now. So there's a lagged effect in the utility industry from the inflation we saw on the operating side and the capital side, to when it actually hits the rates. And it's usually a couple of years later because we have some reserve balance we can use, and we're using that right now, right?
Right.
That's what's funding the deficit here. But we get to a part where when we run the projection, we're getting very close to that target balance that we don't want to go below our emergency reserve, right? And so that's when rates start to kick in to balance the equation. And we're seeing a lot of double-digit increases, usually low double-digit, very similar, or high single-digit increases. But there's a lot of pressure right now on this side. The long-term average is 5% as the consumer price index captures it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I think this question is for staff. Can you remind, you know, listeners at home and ourselves and newer council members, we had a water rate increase last year, and which we were trying to adjust, and we had the conversation about doing automatic increases with that as well. When was the last time we've done a water rate increase as well as cost of service study?
So the last cost of service study was August of 2018. The current rate structure we have in place was adopted in January of 2019 from that cost of service study. And then in October of 2022, council adopted a 24 cent per CCF increase to all tiers. And then in October of 23, it was $2 per month base fee increase for the principal and interest on the debt we issued for the water treatment plant. And then in October 24, they adopted a 4% increase on the base fee in all of Tier 1, 4.5% increase in Tier 2, and 10% increase in Tier 3 in irrigation.
And those were just based on our revenues and expenditures, not on the cost of service study, because we had not done one since 2018.
Correct.
Okay. Sorry, another quick follow-up. Do we know it was the 2019 based on the cost of service in this model, or it was more of that percentage increase that you talked about?
The January 2019, mm-hmm. when we set the rate structure, it was based off the cost of service study that was done in August of 2019.
But I guess when you were talking about the tiers, but not the same sort of methodology.
There's not, as I read the original study, there's not a clear line drawn between cost of service and the rates that are in place. So you can't follow the dollars exactly the same way that we've done here.
Okay. Other questions? Yeah, Jackie.
So I'm the newbie here, still trying to wrap my head around this. So I'm not even sure really who to ask this question of. Does this include any conversation about investing in a new treatment plant if needed, or are we gonna have to go somewhere else for that, or where does that figure into this discussion?
So it showed earlier in 2030 that we would have a $51 million need for funds. We would need to go to the voters and bond that, and this accounts for that.
So given the rate projections out, the 12, the 10, and then the indexing at 3%, there would be sufficient revenue to pay for the debt service of that bond when it comes online. So it's included in our projections.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Done.
And that 2030 bond would be to do what?
Primarily, that would be for phase two of the water treatment plant upgrade.
Okay. Thanks.
And then this is a question for staff. So when we had the conversation around water rates last year, you had a very detailed communications plan for letting customers, ratepayers know. What would be the communication with this? And also, what's the relationship between this going to the Water and Advisory Board? Would they then give us additional recommendations? And that would come, when did that come back to council?
So as far as the Water and Light Advisory Board, we're going to discuss it at their next Wednesday meeting. Kyle will be available for that meeting as well to answer any additional questions for members that may not be here. Then they'll provide their feedback. We'll include that with whatever direction you give us tonight with the budget for 26, and their feedback will be included with the council memo, kind of like a supplemental item. And then we have a communication plan that we did last year. It was two phases. The first phase was to let the citizens know that they would be able to come and speak on behalf of this rate increase or revenue increase at a public hearing for the budget. And then depending on if council adopts the rate increase, then we would also then communicate after the rate increase was to take effect via emails, via letters to all the customers, city source, social media, press releases. We had a whole communication plan developed last year that we would just duplicate and make tweaks to for this if needed.
Can I request, looking at, you know, residential, obviously you have on that slide 31, 65% of annual bills will decrease, 35% will increase. But then on commercial, it's almost like a 50-50, you know, 46 will go down, 54 will increase. Based on the conversations that we've had with business license fees, I might make a special request that we reach out to the Chamber of Commerce and maybe just to especially identify some of those that especially will see an increase. I know you'll be reaching out to our residents and will they pay more attention, but I'm not sure that sometimes some of this information gets to our commercial customers.
Well, we have our key account staff also reach out to them directly
okay.
and provide information to them too. So we would okay. do that again.
Okay. Any other questions from council? I think, I mean, this is obviously the first time that council has seen this. So I want to say I'd like to hear back from Water and Light. Might personally, like, I appreciate David's having the conversation. Oh, David's coming back to the microphone. Come up here, water expert.
Anybody, if anybody would like to have a sit down, if like, I mean, you know, Kyle is a busy guy. You know, I don't know as much about what they've done as he does, but if you want to sit down with me and talk about this and have any questions, I am available to answer.
David, not everyone might know what your job is.
Oh,
would you like to
I'm so sorry. I'm a associate professor of government public affairs at the University of Missouri. I've been studying water utilities for 12 years, primarily studying water rates, affordability, conservation orientation. Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah.
And so I live with water rates. Yeah. And so, yes, sorry, I'm just a random guy who wants to talk about water rates. No, this is my professional,
yes.
In addition to my volunteerism on the Water and Light Advisory Board, it is my professional capacity that I serve. Sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah. It's good. Thank you. Because I think for me, it would be, yeah, the having that sort of feedback, but then progressing. I would be interested in the conversation about the phasing in of some of those fee increases, or at least to see the differences and have that be part of the public engagement, just to see, because you show some of them, it is a full doubling of their fee, I think. For this part, yeah, the miscellaneous, just to see how that conversation happens at the board level, and recommendations. I do tend to trust the experts on this, but I also know that can be an impact. Yeah, Don and then Nick.
Well, I was going to say, since given that the connection fees and that you were just referring to are part of going to be part of the development, that might be another avenue to engage both the chamber.
Yeah. Nick, you had a question?
I just want to give anyone else from the board an opportunity to speak.
And
just, is there anything else that you all can think of that we ought to be attentive to or that you're going to have some very specific kinds of follow-up you want to do?
Phillip's just shaking his head.
I mean, if you're saying no, you can come to the mic and say no, I guess.
Not at this time, but once we've all looked at it, we might have some additional thoughts. But right now, we're very pleased. Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah. Great. Thank
I,
you.
I would just ask Phillip, or at the board meeting, if you guys do and you want to send communication to council to please do that so that we can give direction. Thank
Will
you.
Do.
Thank you. All right. Anything? Yeah, Valerie.
All right. I want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. On the water system equity fee, I understood these ones that grow more rapidly by year three that are the largest charge. Is that also a relatively small number of people with a small number of ratepayers?
So these aren't ratepayers for the
these are
so these are the new connections. What you're seeing on this is the three-year phase-in
right.
of that fee. And the only other thing to remember on these is this is the cost for a single-family home, or a bigger meter would actually pay more. It scales by meter size as well. So,
So this is new connections for both commercial and residential together.
It would be any type of new connection onto the system.
Okay. Hmm.
Okay. Looking down for our next notes that you have. Do you have direction from council on the exploration? Or I guess if there's any council kind of feedback that you would want to give on them working on the proposal with Water and Light Advisory Board, as well as modeling to see what this would do. It would still come back to council for a vote. Correct. After the public engagement piece. So this is not your last time to say, but this is basically you're looking for direction to proceed with as recommended.
Yes, if you direct us to proceed as recommended, then we could prepare this for the budget. Mm-hmm. with this recommendation in mind and begin the communication plan, but also we could begin working on the changes we would need to make to the billing system so that we could implement this beginning October 1st, because that's going to take some time.
Right.
So if there's significant changes that you would want to this rate design, then that we would need to know sooner, or we would need to delay the implementation, which means we wouldn't get the revenue that we would need for next year. So
starting the process with the recommendations makes the most sense. And I'm assuming part of this communications will be putting together a calculator like was done last year, which people can put in what their water usage is and see what the impacts will be to the proposed rate.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I would think they should move forward.
I would think so too. Any concerns with them proceeding with this? No? Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you, Kyle, for all the work and apparently creating the gold standard for how we're supposed to be doing water rates.
Thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you. All right, moving on. Is there anything else on this topic discussion? No? Okay. Moving on under the other items for council to discuss. As a reminder, we got word on Friday that Lisa Meyer is resigning effective May 16th. And while I know this was the last thing that she wanted to do, I appreciate her taking care of herself and expressed as such. So the next date of a regular election day for public elections would be August 5th, 2025. As a reminder, because there's more than 1 year left on the term, it has to go to an election. It cannot be a council appointment, which is why we're having this conversation. The county clerk has indicated that there is a known upcoming ballot measure that will be presented to the voters on that date, which could result in economies of scale related to cost sharing for the election. But as an alternative, the state law allows the council discretionary authority to select a different date in September or October, and on which to call a special election in order to fill a vacancy in office to accommodate an extended period of time for a nominating petition. So the question for us is, if council determines that we want to designate a day other than August 5th, to fill the vacancy, we would need to do a new resolution. But Nancy has prepared for us a resolution that we could add to the agenda this evening to call for a special election on August 5th, 2025. The timeline working would be that the resolution would be today for May 5th. We could do then a press release and communicate about the special election tomorrow, and nominating packets for prospective candidates would be available Wednesday. This is a similar process that we did last year, we're a few weeks after that, so there's a shorter period of time for it. But the publication of the election notice would go in May 11th in the paper. Opening date to file would be May 13th, and it would need to close by June 3rd. Is that correct, Sheila? The city clerk will need to let the election authority know that we're having a special election, which is a certain period requirement, and that one's May 27th. And then by June 3rd, by 5 p.m., the closing date to file nominating petitions would be, and then Sheila would make sure that the election authority had the names to appear on the ballot by June 10th. And that gives 8 weeks prior to the election day, because of the need for absentee ballots and for everything to be mailed out and time to process. So the question is, from council, is basically, do we want to go with the August 5th on this timeline, or do we want to set an alternative date for September or October? And what questions do you have? And hopefully Nancy or Sheila have the answers. Sheila, do you want to add anything
before?
The
only thing I want to add is the filing period to do a nominating petition would only be 3 weeks in this situation, and in last year it was 5 weeks, I believe, or 6 weeks.
It was 6 weeks last year. It was 5 weeks for the Jenny Chadwick
resignation and 5 weeks for the Helen Anthony's
resignation.
Okay.
So I just want to point out it is a shorter time frame than what we've done in the past, but in order to make the August election, it kind of has to be because of the notification requirements.
Okay. I'm just going to come down the line. Betsy.
I would think probably what you laid out would be a good idea to do it in August. It is a short time frame for people to put their you know, throw their names in the hat and the ring, so to speak, but it will keep us from having to have a special election. It's also the time when people expect to have elections. I mean, that's when they start looking to say, is there an election in August? If we do it in September or October, I'm not sure how many people are going to actually know that we're having an election, and it's going to cost us more money. And then finally, I'm not sure how helpful it'll be to have someone elected in August for the budget in September, but it would be nice if we had some representative from Ward 2.
My thoughts.
Don. Kind of along with what Betsy said, that if we choose a date other than August or November, which is the next one that's on the county calendar, we would bear the cost of the basically the entire cost of that election.
That is correct.
Okay.
I will point out it's only Ward 2. It's not citywide. So that does
agreed, but still.
Help, but it's still the entire election, yes.
Yeah. Do we have any idea what that might, what that would be?
We don't. We have some history that we've provided to you. I think the last time there was, it really does vary. I think we're probably looking at something close to $90,000 regardless. I mean, there's certain mobilization they have in the city clerk's office just to do any election, and we would bear.
In the county clerk's office.
Yeah, I'm sorry, in the county clerk's office. And
I got no mobilization.
The fact of the matter is that you pay 100% of that if there is no cost sharing. Yeah. If there is cost sharing, you don't pay that.
Given that the city's already tightening its belt, I think. Yeah, I'm going to move we avoid that, so it's either August or November.
Nick, you were going to say something?
I don't think I have much to add. I'm sorry for the occasion, of course.
Yes.
And I think that one thing I'm really uncomfortable with is when a ward is not represented, frankly, for any period of time. And so I think while this will put some pressure on some people, that decision-making process can bear to be accelerated, and I think getting signatures shouldn't be a problem for a viable candidate. So I'm for doing it this way.
Yeah. Thank you.
I really had nothing to add. I agree. I think sharing the cost and sooner to get representative for the ward is important.
Val, you're in a unique position from having to have a quick turnaround. Any comments from you?
I've done this recently, and I have a lot of thoughts. Getting signatures isn't hard for a viable candidate. It is a very quick time to make up your mind and be certain about it. Starting in August for September budget, I did exactly that. I felt that I was well prepared, and it was difficult. I don't like having a ward unrepresented. Part of me wants to wait because that is so fast to make up your mind. And I want people to have opportunities so we have good representation. One of the questions that came to mind was if the city had any other ballot items that it might have considered on an off cycle that would go with that.
Not that I can think of at the present moment.
I mean, I think I would concur with the rest of council that August is a good choice because the more time that a ward is unrepresented, the worse off that ward is. But it's a tragic situation, and I hate to see it happen more than once.
All right, so I'm hearing consensus over going with this quick timeline. I imagine it'll be on all of us also to help raise the awareness about the August as well as the opportunities for petitions. Sheila, Wednesday is when we would have the ability, remind us, Wednesday is when petitions could be picked up. May 13th.
There's a chance, it won't be first thing tomorrow morning, but there's a chance I'll have some packets ready by tomorrow afternoon. But
they'll just look for a press release that is showing that, and we'll put it out on our social media for the city.
Yep.
And then they can start turning them in May 13th.
Correct.
And then the final day to turn in would be June 3rd by 5 p.m.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So, yes, Nancy.
So, Mayor, we do have copies that will be available tonight.
Of a resolution.
Need to get some more of the resolution if anybody who attends the meeting wants to see a copy of that, because it will have to be added to your agenda, and you'll have an opportunity to do that, do it all again.
Yeah.
But you can see why we put it before you tonight. We wanted to get some direction because we're in the same conundrum that you're in. It's a very short time frame, but that really wasn't a decision for city staff to be able to make.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you for that. Thank you for putting the work in addition to all the other things we have going on this evening. All right, any other topics for conversation or agenda? All right, I'll go ahead and adjourn.